Welcome back to Tea Time. Today, we are changing up our plan a little bit because one of us, Tish, she is actually out sick today with strep throat. And so it is just Rika and I, and we decided to just kind of change things up and do something a little fun and take advantage of the fact that I have Rika all to myself. So I am just going to put her in the hot seat and I am going to interview her, and we are going to get to hear the perspective of what it is like to be a pastor's wife. So let me introduce my guest today to our show, Rika.
Hello.
Well, I think this is going to be fun. And I actually first started thinking of this idea as we were trying to talk about what we should do today with Tish not being here. Because I just kind of thought, you know, we have shared before about how we met and how you and Tish go way back and you've known each other since you were kids. But as much as we talk, there's still like quite a bit that I don't know, I feel like, about your day-to-day life and just about, you know, who you are and all of that. So I thought it'd also just be kind of a cool opportunity for me to get to fill in some of those pieces for myself. So let's see. So I know that you are happily married to a pastor. How long has your husband been the pastor at the church that you guys lead?
Okay. He just celebrated 5 years the second week in March. So 5 years.
Okay. Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
And so were you members of that church before he assumed that role, or did you just go to that church for him to take the pastor role?
Yeah, no. Actually, we were members of the daughter's church, if that makes sense. So the church that he pastors, he was called to. And so it's called the mother church because the church that we were came out of, well, the church that we were attending or members of came out of that church, branched off of it, if you would say. Does that make sense?
Okay, so you were attending a church that was a branch off of the church that you are leading now?
Correct.
Oh, okay. I usually hear about it going the opposite, where it's like you leave your main church to go plant an offshoot somewhere. So you kind of did it backwards there. That's cool. Yeah. Now, is that like a common terminology among your denomination, this whole mother daughter thing? Because I am not familiar with that at all. And well, it sounds kind of creepy to me.
Or sister church. Yes.
Okay. Sister church sounds a little more normal for some reason.
Okay.
I know you're not in a cult, so I feel comfortable just, you know, saying this out loud. All right. So let me just ask you now more about you. As a child or just at any point in your life, really growing up, I know sometimes we have these like ideas of what our life is going to be like in our future as an adult. Did you ever in your mind imagine yourself being a pastor's wife?
So no, being a preacher's wife. No, not in my wildest dreams.
Okay. Well, did we at least get like 2 out of 4 there? You have kids. Is your life great?
Right. Yes. 2 out of 4. My life.
Okay. Okay.
Great.
Cool. Cool.
Got the children. And
all right.
And I got an amazing husband too. So if I could just go on a little tangent here about my husband, God blessed me with him undeservingly. That's awesome.
Oh, I mean, that's super sweet. But like, you know, I think I'm sure you followed the biblical commandment of being equally yoked, and Sean got something just as awesome.
Yeah. He says the same.
So,
say.
Okay. So, when you were at your former church, was your husband a pastor there?
No. So, okay. So shout out to Rising Mount Zion Baptist Church in New Kent, Virginia, where the pastor there is Rudolph Sykes Jr. And his lovely wife. She's not the pastor, but, you know, the first lady Sykes, Cheryl D. Sykes. No. So Sean was a minister there, an ordained minister.
Okay. So he was an ordained minister, which, you know, yeah, it means that, you know, you can do all the stuff.
Right.
And he was obviously like, you know, maybe in some kind of leadership role, I would guess, being a minister in the church.
Yes. So he, there he was the youth minister.
Okay. So when you met him, was he already an ordained minister, or did that happen after you guys got married?
No, right? So no, it happened after we got married. I met him in his sophomore year of college. Upon his year of graduation from college, he was licensed a minister, and we were in Georgia at the time. So our pastor there licensed him.
Okay. I think where my mind's going here is I'm trying to imagine, you know, you meeting him and you guys starting dating. And I'm just wondering if, you know, it was already really clear that he was like on this path to ministry at that point, you know, like if you felt like, oh, I'm dating a pastor, you know, cause I think that's kind of fun to like, you know, to hear the take on that of what that would be like. And if there's some, you know, stuff that comes with that, you know?
Okay. We were not, man, I don't even know how to say this. So we both grew up in the church. And then there was a time when we met, it was a time in our life where, yes, we knew God, but we weren't going to church, if that makes sense. But God was pressing on me that this is not normal. And so I was looking for a church because I had moved from California to there and didn't have a church home. And so what he would do was take me around on Sundays to find, I was picking the churches, and it just, they really weren't working out. So he was like, you know what? I'm going to take you to this church he had started going to when he got to Georgia, because he's from Virginia.
Okay.
So that's kind of where our relationship started growing spiritually. And then, so as we, our relationship was growing, like we were having Bible studies together and praying together. Then, you know, we got married 2003, and then 2005 is when he was licensed to minister. So when he was telling me that he was being, so within that 2-year span, when he was telling me that he felt the leading of God, he said he already felt that this is where he was supposed to go. He just didn't share that with me. So to answer your question, no, I didn't know I was on the path of dating. And I think maybe God was telling him to keep it to himself so I wouldn't run away.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's like what I was kind of thinking about. Like just, you know, how that's a lot, you know? And I want to just go back to a minute to what you said about how when you first, you know, you met, you had both like, you know, been brought up in church, but you weren't necessarily attending church. And I just wanted to say, it seems like that's kind of a common, I think, thing that happens just in that age range. And, you know, I think a lot of it is just the simple logistics of, like you said, you moved from California, you know, to a new place. And it's one thing to just grow up and always go to church with your family. And it's a whole new thing as a young adult to suddenly have to pick out your own church. And that can be like kind of really daunting and overwhelming. Like you kind of realize, like, I'm not actually sure what I look for in a church, you know, like I always just went to the whatever one my mom went to, you know, so what does my church look like? I don't know. And yeah, that's, I've been in that similar stage as well, you know, where you realize like, oh, I guess I have to find my own church now. And, you know, church shopping, as they say, is not necessarily always an easy task. So would you feel was Sean in a similar place with you on that, as he was also kind of like, you know, in that early adulthood and kind of, you know, finding his own spiritual path forward? Or was he in a different place where he was kind of still firmly, you know, established in whatever he had been brought up in as a child? Or
so, yeah, we were in the same place. Like he wasn't going either. Like I said, it wasn't until that the Lord was prompting me, like, this is not normal to be going on. You need to be in a place where you can worship and, you know, have community.
Yeah.
And that's how God worked that out. So yeah, we were in the same place, being young and dumb together.
So would you say though, that like, cause I first of all could relate one to 100%. I felt all those feelings, the weird, like, I'm not going to church. And also like, that definitely feels wrong. And I know I need to go to church and, you know, and all, and being young and dumb, all that. Would you say though, that like, was your relationship still very much like from the beginning centered in Christ? Or was it more like a, you guys thought each other were cute, but, and like, oh, it's a perk that he's also a Christian. Hey, like, you know, cause I mean, I was not your friend back then. Like so I don't know where you were really.
Yeah. So in it, for me, I've always felt that someone that I was connected to like that, you know, dating, needed to know the Lord. And so I knew that. Mm-hmm. So that was the foundation. But we weren't acting as if we knew the Lord.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, it's different from, let's say, like, you know, to either grown people or even younger people who meet at church. So it's like their foundation is church.
Right.
And it's also, you know, different from, yeah, people who aren't Christians and just meet and maybe become Christians together, you know? So it's yeah. just interesting to hear, you know, both sides and kind of, you know, where he was at and where you were at, given that he, you know, ended up somewhere on that dating journey, deciding that he wanted to take the path of ministry. And so, you know, did he share that with you when he, you know, you said he had that kind of calling on his heart and he didn't reveal it at first, but I guess how did he share that with you? I want to, and was it a surprise to you when you,
it was that? A surprise. I think it was, I want to say it was one day after service. He might've been talking to the pastor and then that's, you know, then going home and discussing, that was years ago. So, just trying to remember. I just know that we were discussing it and I was like, whoa, dude, like, what are you doing? Like, this changes everything. And not that I wasn't for him, but that's a, you know, it's a big thing, you know, to say that you're going to be a minister. And of course, you know, how we have, I would say when you're not, so you have a relationship with God and then, you know, just like what you learn in the daily life of church and the things that you're influenced by, meaning. So my idea when he said that God is calling him and it's like, whoa, that's a big thing. Now you got to be like the top person and, you know, you're always going to be needed or now I have to like, I can't be myself type, you know what I'm saying? How we kind of put those pressures on people that are in ministry. So that's kind of where I was going with that. But yeah, supported him. And it was just like, okay, we really need to decide. So interesting enough though, we agreed in not saying that we had, meaning that we talked about it, but he said that he wasn't looking to be a pastor. Cause it was like, okay, you're going to be a minister, but then where does that, you know, where does that go? Are you just going to be a minister? Or are you going to be a pastor? Like, are you going to be on that path? And he was like, no, I'm not going to be a pastor. We both were like, no, that's like too much. And look at us today.
Okay. So he was basically just, you know, seeing the getting ordained as just, you know, part of his, of playing some role in ministry, but he really was not ever seeing that end point being a lead pastor. Okay. If you're comfortable sharing, can you give me like, what you remember as like your first initial, just like actual visceral reaction to like him telling you like, yeah, I'm going to do this. Like you told me it was like a big shock, but like, what was it in your head? Were you imagining like, you know, him up there, like on stage wearing like the pastor get up or like, what was your like initial, like first, like takeaway when he dropped that news on you that you were like, whoa.
Remember there's stages. So are you asking about when he said licensed to minister?
Like first time he told you when it was like the first time he told you when it was like the biggest shock when, you know, when you were like, wait, what? Like what in your head, like what were you thinking? Were you like imagining, yeah, like, oh, I'm gonna be married to Minister Sean, like what's this? Like, you know.
Yeah, it was like I said, it was a shock. And it was like, whoa, that wasn't part of the plan. and
what did you think your plan was?
I just thought we were going to be, you know, happily married and raising kids and you know.
But what was he on a path to be a doctor?
No, he was
okay.
He went to school to he was going to be a teacher.
And okay,
then
okay.
He did a fifth year of college because he decided to change his major and be a social worker. So
okay. So you were thinking, I'm going to be married to a teacher or a social worker.
Exactly. You know,
okay. Somebody,
we're helping people. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that, you know, he's going to be a minister, you know, or a pastor. But looking back, it's like seeing the connection, seeing the stones that we,
yeah,
you know, we're hopping on and how God uses those. So him having that passion to work with people, social work, is just the heart of God that God placed in him to care for people and wanting to help and you know, lead people to be their better selves. And that's what, you know, pastors do, ministers do.
I love that you said that, because I think that's so true. I think, you know, God definitely puts these individual desires in our hearts. I guess unique desires is, you know, the good way to put it. Like, we don't all have the same gifts and we don't all have the same calling. And that unique, you know, kind of desire of our heart, we can respond to God like in so many different ways for that calling, you know, and serve him in so many different ways in that way. And like, I think it's absolutely true that you could have a secular, you know, job and still be, you know, responding to that calling that, you know, that God put on your heart, to serve him in that capacity and use your gifts. And certainly, you know, like flipped vice versa, you can take the things that you're good at in the world and instead devote and use those to, you know, to honor and serve the Lord too in ministry. So that's super cool. So I guess now I'm wondering, like, was it a bigger shock for you when you were like in the young and dating phase and he drops this bomb, like, oh yeah, I'm getting ordained, because that was like the first thing you heard of it? Or was it when he actually, you know, realized, yeah, I'm going to do this, I'm going to actually become a pastor out of this? Because I could see it maybe where it's like the second one was a more of a gradual thing. Like, you're already kind of in the life of ministry. It seems like the next logical step. But at the same time, that's where the real reality sits in. That's where the real life changes, where you're now a, you know, a pastor's wife, even though I guess before you're a youth pastor's wife, kind of, you know, by.
Right, right. Yeah, like, I mean, you hit that right on the head, that yes, it was like first drop bomb, that first like license to minister, like, whoa, plans change. And then as he was ministering and on that path, then it became, it was less of a shock. Although we did, when it was time, when he felt like, okay, I think God is now calling me to pastor a church. So before he started putting his applications in to do that, we had a discussion, because then it was like, okay, now this is a, you know, this is the next step, but still having to talk about, you know, like boundaries and, you know, goals and things like that. So yeah, it was just a transition, understanding like, this is the next step. This is God. And it was also growth as well, spiritual growth, knowing, okay, God, this is what you have called him to do. And when I say him, God's also been teaching me that it's not just him, that he's been calling me as well. One thing that pastors would say, that marriage is a ministry. And so by me being married to him, you know, we're already ministering to different people and couples and things like that, whether we know it or not. Does that make sense? Yeah. So I actually have always thought that, well, I said I grew up thinking, like, you know, having those childlike dreams of what life would be like. I still felt like a husband and wife should work together. And so as I was growing spiritually, I've always wanted to work with my husband spiritually, that God will use us both together in ministry.
That makes sense. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's when you're joining lives together, you know, you really are living together. And, you know, if you're both living for the Lord and serving the Lord, you know, that's something that naturally you're going to do together. So you talked about kind of those expectations that a lot of times we put on ourselves, you know, and pastors' wives, I think, you know, from what I hear, certainly experience that, you know, that it's not just the regular expectations of the world, but now this added layer of really being in such a prominent position, you know, where you have kind of eyes on you at all times. So if you don't mind, I think it's, you know, I'd be interested in hearing from you just what the reality of, you know, what were some of those things that just changed in a practical sense for you when your husband really did begin, you know, being heavily involved in church leadership? I mean, I could even think, you know, being a youth pastor or youth minister, you're still kind of, you know, playing that role. I was going to say, when you were talking about being a team in ministry, that I have always viewed pastors' wives to really be almost just as much a pastor in a different sense than their husband, you know, like their husband may be the one preaching on Sundays, but they are usually, you know, really in a place of leadership in the women's ministries and seen as somebody that, you know, is kind of a respected person you can go to for, you know, for advice and things like that. You know, if I was at my old church, for example, you know, where I, you know, had the pleasure of, you know, kind of being in ministry with the pastor's wife frequently, I wouldn't feel like if I went to her with some sort of spiritual question or problem, she would say, oh, well, why don't you see my husband about that? You know, I feel like she would take the time to talk to me and to pray with me and minister me, you know, just like I would expect like her husband does to people as well. So I'm saying all that because I can imagine that you kind of already started like living that life even before he became a lead pastor, with him doing things like youth ministry and stuff like that. Maybe you were kind of already in that role in your church a little bit. But I guess I'm just curious, you know, maybe when that really started to become your life and your reality, what had to change? What had to go? What were some things that you just kind of realized to yourself, like, oh, I didn't, you know, think about this, but yeah, I guess I can't, I guess I need to change this, or I guess I can't do that because I'm a pastor's wife now.
Yeah. So right. When he was in ministry as a youth minister, it was just me just being the helpmeet, just like helping him with the background stuff, or, you know, like trips and things like that with the youth, just being encouragement and just, you know, just helping. But now as a pastor's wife, and when you say that, I'm glad that you asked, because then I get to be really honest, that when it was time, when he was accepted as pastor, because we were going through around all these churches, God took us like all over Virginia just to take us like a mile down the street from where we, you know, from where his pastor is. So we're just like, that's God. So going through that, and sometimes, you know, like I remember maybe once or twice where while he was being interviewed, like I had to be in the interview too. And I'm like, why are you interviewing me? This has nothing to do with me. But anyway, so God called us to Second Liberty Baptist Church of Quinton, Virginia, which is, you know, right in New Kent. But we've been there 5 years. But I remember, you know, upon his acceptance, that it was surreal. It was like, okay, now this is it, you know, and feeling the pressure of, and if anybody knows me and we're still getting to know each other, but I'm sure that you can feel that I am who I am. I tried to be as honest as I could without hurting people's feelings, but I just like to be me, and don't want to put on airs. But I felt that I was like, now, because of, like you said, what we see or what we hear from other people, hearing from other pastors' wives, oh, they're going to treat you like this, or they expect this from you. And I was like, I started feeling the pressure of like, oh my gosh, these people are going to put me in a box and they don't know that I just do me, you know?
Right.
And thankfully, and seeing God's favor and just his blessings upon us, because we were also praying too that the church that God would place us in, that they would love us and we would love them, and just be accepting of our whole family. And that's what Second Liberty has been to me. They did not put me in a box. They let me be me. And then that pressure just, it rolled away. And most of it came from before he had this, it was like, you have a celebration of the being ordained as pastor. You know, and telling my fear, sharing my feelings with Sean and just saying what I just told you about being a box and pressure. And he was like, babe, just do you. Like, it, aww, you're not going to affect me. Like, it's like, I'm good with you. And what you do, you do. And what you don't do, you don't do. And that I love that when he said that, and that took the pressure off as well. But being 5 years and just seeing, just being, they just love us and we love them, and we work together. So it's been a real blessing, and thankful for the journey.
That's so sweet. I really love that you went there and you kind of shared that side of it. Because honestly, that was kind of one of my motivations behind thinking it would be fun to do this little interview with you, was that you were very unlike any pastor's wife I've ever met. And I mean that in, I mean that very much in like the most positive sense. And I want to like, you know, be careful in what I say, because I'm not at all trying to imply, nor do I feel that I have a negative idea about pastor's wives. I mean, I've genuinely enjoyed every pastor's wife, I think, that I've had, you know, the pleasure of getting to know. But I guess what I mean is that there are, I think, just the reality is there are these expectations that come along with any role that we take on in life, and especially a leadership role, right? And that's biblical. The Bible talks about, you know, when you're in positions of leadership, that, you know, kind of that higher level of accountability and responsibility is placed on you, you know? And so on one hand, you are this person who I perceive to be kind of someone who just naturally lives beyond reproach. Like, you know, I don't, when I asked you like what had to go in your life, I wasn't imagining that you all of a sudden had to like take down a bunch of like ratchet videos of yourself off your social media or something like that. Like, you know, like you're just, that's not the vibe you get off, you know, you give off. I don't see you as somebody who like had to super clean up your language or anything like that. Okay. to fit the, you know, whatever this is, air quotes, idea of what a pastor's wife's supposed to be. You know, so it's not about that, but I think just there's something else there. There's something else that beyond the idea of like, you know, of living beyond reproach, we kind of take that another step further and we try to kind of give this image of also being like a perfect person. And then along with that perfect person, again, you all can't see my air quotes here, but along with that perfect person, it's kind of almost becomes very unhuman. You almost become, I feel like, more like a spokesmodel person or a symbol of the church than an actual just person. Like, and that's what I see, you know, kind of in the same way that, you know, we would be taken aback if some like very well-known CEO, like, you know, put some real personal stuff on their Twitter or their company webpage. It's like, we expect a certain, like, you know, uniformity, I guess is the best way to put it. We expect kind of this certain uniformity that everything you say is going to almost just be an extension of the church itself. And yes, I think that on, like, again, you know, on the one hand, you never would want to say anything that contradicts your church or that contradicts the Bible, but that also doesn't mean that you are merely just your church, or, you know, you still are your own distinct person with your own, you know, personality, right?
Right.
You know,
right.
And so you should be free to be yourself. You should be free to do you, you know? And that's what I guess I like about you, is like, I don't feel like everything you say is some weird scripted thing that, like, you know, you're thinking in the back of your mind, like, okay, what if this transcript was printed out and put on my church webpage? What would it look like? And what would they, you know, like, you just talk like you're a normal person talking. And I don't mean that, like, you're not saying anything that's, you know, that's wrong or that is controversial or anything like that. You're just being you though. Right. You know,
right.
You really seem like a regular person. And so, and that's refreshing. It's refreshing because if I'm talking to somebody, no matter how pleasant they are, and no matter how well they embody that beautiful uniform vision of the church I'm attending, sometimes I feel like, you know, well, am I talking to a real person or am I just talking to this ambassador of the church?
Yeah.
You know, because I think they can be one and the same, but when you don't feel like you're seeing like a genuine kind of personal side of that person where there's a little bit of vulnerability there, or, you know, just a little bit of uniqueness there. It becomes unclear. You know what I mean? Yeah, I don't know. Does that make sense?
No, it makes total sense. And that's one of the, one of you strive to, my heart totally seeks God. That's what I want. You know, I desire to please God. And so from that, then every action and thought should represent Him. Does that make sense? But I am human.
Yes, yes.
But because I love, I think God has given me a heart, just like He gave it to my husband, a heart to love people, because I know what it feels not to be loved. And then reading in God's word what grace is, and that's and how He wants us to love, that we should show that to everyone. So I want people to know that when they're in relationship with me, or just knowing me or being in contact with me, that I do love them, whether I know them for 5 minutes or 3 seconds or years or months. But I just wanted to be an extension of God, if that makes sense. And it's not churchy. I hope it doesn't sound churchy, but just that it's real. It's confirmed when people, and not that I'm seeking to please people, but I was just going to just say this, that someone told me the other day that they see in me that I really love people, that I have a genuine Aww. Heart. And that's what I just want. Like, you know, that you would see Christ in me. But I got to be me, because it took a really long time to be me, if that makes sense. And God created us all as individuals. So if I'm acting like somebody else, I'm not being me. And there's two of us, or whoever, many, you know, so.
Amen. Yeah. Yes. No, I love that. And I think you really helped make the point I'm trying to make, which I think is that even though all humans are flawed, our humanity is not a flaw. You know, our humanity is intentional design by our creator. And that means that those unique traits that we all embody are glorifying to God, right? You know? Right. And so we want to make sure that we stay in that place where, as much as we are aware of our own, you know, flaws as humans, we don't try to avoid those by kind of denying our humanity and becoming, you know, whatever it is this kind of like, yeah, like we all just need to be like this uniform cookie cutter, you know, safe robot here that never, you know, never does anything that could potentially be a liability for us, you know?
Right. How can we be a witness, you know, how can we be a testimony if we're a robot?
Right. Yeah.
I can't relate. And I think that's another thing why I set out to just be me and be able to relate to others. Because I do know what it's like not to have a relationship, with the pastor or the pastor's wife, not a Rise of my Zion though, because they were example of how you can talk to your pastor and your pastor's wife, and so they set that example to just be open,
yeah.
Of course, you can't. You still have to have those barriers there, because you can't let everybody in, but you can certainly welcome everyone, if that makes sense.
Yep. And I think, you know, I heard you earlier say boundaries. And I definitely appreciate that. That's a kind of a healthy and important part of, again, any role we take on, we have certain boundaries we have to keep up to keep it healthy. But I also see, I think the flip side of that is that in a church, sometimes it might come off. And again, I'm not necessarily speaking of any personal pastor's wife that I know, cause I love all my pastor's wives. Okay. I think it can come off as, and this could just be my own thing too, is that I almost assume that these pastors' wives won't really be able to have real relationships with me like another woman in church would, because they have to have these necessary boundaries. And because deep relationships within the church with other women could be liabilities, you know, relationships, you know, part of making yourself vulnerable and experiencing, you know, the beauty and the love of relationships also mean that there might be pain there, you know, and, you know, getting too close and too deep in relationship can complicate things. It could, you know, you have the potential then to maybe hurt or offend somebody that you wouldn't if you're just doing the pleasantries in the church lobby. And so I think maybe, again, this could just be my own takeaway, my own mind, but I think my idea has kind of been that church pastors or pastors' wives they don't have the liberty maybe to go really deep and to get close with the other women, like women who don't have that pressure and that responsibility on. So I've thought about how, one, that, you know, that affects kind of the way the church members see them. Like, I guess, yeah, I kind of expect that they're not going to want to become, you know, best friends or something. Mm-hmm. And then also, but that it could maybe be a lonely place too, you know, a place where you know, okay, yep, I'm here for others and I'm pouring out for others and being this great light. But who do I get to go and cry to, and who do I get to be vulnerable to, and who lifts me up, you know? So maybe, I don't know if that's real or my own head.
No, I think it's definitely real. And just like we both, you know, you and I just said about boundaries. So not that I can't have a real relationship with people, because I do. But just like in any relationship, you have to be careful what you share. But I do have, you have to, and as pastor's wife, you have to have your people. So yes, mm-hmm. you can relate to everyone and you can be friends and go out and, you know, have a good time with others. But then you have your people. So even if I wasn't a pastor's wife, you still have people. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, I have many friends, but so I would say that that closeness where I can really be raw with are my own parents who have done a lot of influencing. And they say your parents shouldn't be your friends, but we're old enough to where we just have that relationship. So, yeah, my parents are my mentors. Of course, you know, Sean, you know, he's my second best friend because God's my first. I just learned that in a marriage conference this morning. Like all this time you're married and, you know, there people have said that, you know, your spouse should be your best friend. And then these people today said, no, your spouse should be your second best friend. God should be your best friend, you know, because he's the one who can really meet all of your needs. Like, oh,
that's
cool.
Hilarious. Yeah, absolutely. Funny, Hannah always actually corrects me whenever I tell her, like, oh, I love you so much. I love you more than anybody in this world. She's like, except for God though, right? I'm like, okay, well, God's not a person. She's like, well, he was a man. He was fully man on earth, mom. I'm like, okay.
I love it that she's checking you.
Yeah, she's constantly reminding me that God is my first love that above her, which is, I love which is it. Great. Okay, so my thinking, I think this is like my last question for you, like maybe second to last. I'm thinking for me personally, the hardest adjustment for me, if I was to suddenly become a pastor's wife, if the Lord willing, just put a pastor on my doorstep who proposed to me, which I would be fine to all you single pastors listening out there.
I would be fine with that. In the name of Jesus.
Okay. So my biggest hurdle would be that I would have to probably not, or at least cut back on the amount of times back in pre-COVID days that I would get to church barely on time, you know, where I'm pulling up into the parking lot when service is actually starting, roll in there 5 minutes late with like my hair just washed in a messy bun. And I'm kind of hiding in back with my coffee, not really went zipping out after church. Cause it was one of those days where I really just don't feel like anybody's seen my face half all messed up with some mascara from the night before. I don't really want to talk to anybody. And I just got to zip out. I'm thinking that would not fly for a pastor's wife. Was there anything in your life that is just a real truth, real talk here that you had to change that you're like, okay, man, this is different now. I have to give this up. I have to change this.
That is hilarious. So as you're saying this, I'm laughing because that's me right there. Mm-hmm. Yes. So my family has a running joke that because I'm tardy. I'm tardy to the party. All the time, pre-COVID.
The yes.
yeah. So we stay, I'm gonna just blame it on that we stay 30 minutes away from the church. So, however, I'm not a morning person. And I think I've said this in some of our podcasts, but, and I try to tell people I'm not a morning person. I may seem like it, right? But I just need time to just kind of warm up and just get moving and, you know, take time to get myself together. And so, yes, church starts at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning. And I'll probably be there about after 10, 10:15, 10:30.
I love it.
You know, oh man, it's just too late for me to get on the road because I'm not gonna make it.
So he goes ahead of you and you come when God tells you the time is right.
Yes, he's like, I'm leaving. You know, we'll set out to ride together to church, and if I have it, okay, it's time for me to go, babe. I'll see you there. And I'm looking at him like, dang, you can't wait 5 minutes.
He's like, no, I can't. Like,
no, I gotta
go. The pulpit's standing empty.
Right. And so, so my family, the kids, when I, you know, they'd be like, they say that this is what our members would probably say. Here come first lady, always late again. You know, she ain't never on time. You know, so they, and not talking about our church members. I'm just saying this is what my kids say in their heads out loud to me. You know, just joking. You know.
Yeah.
You know, what people just might be saying, like, look at her.
Mm-hmm. They're trying to be like that negative self-talk in your head that you're trying to like rebuke. You can tell your children, get behind me, Satan. Like, right. This is not the voice of God.
Yeah. So, yeah, I have not given up the tardiness. I do try really hard to mm-hmm. be on time. And you just never know what people go through in the morning. And sometimes it used to be like, I would be like fussing at the girls, like, come on, let's go, you know, while I yet trying to get my own self ready. And, but then they got older and they can get themselves dressed. And but Sunday mornings aren't always pretty, I would say, because even when they did get older, now they're, you know, there's that, you know, those hormones are raging. They, you know, they woke up on the wrong side of the bed and it's like, oh my gosh, why do you have attitude in the morning? Obviously you didn't talk to God, you know, but you know, now your attitude is affecting my attitude, and on my way, hopefully in the 30 minute drive, I can calm down, you know, stuff like that.
Oh yeah. I know all about that.
So yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything really that I've given up, because like you said, and what I've said too, that I'm just me. And I don't think that I was done anything or was doing anything that would put a distaste in anyone's mouth about my husband or, you know, the church or what have you.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And I'm not holy. I'm not like perfect. I'm not trying to come off cross like that. I'm just saying, I don't think there wasn't anything really. It was just, it is what it is.
I mean, that's cool, you know, that you like that you really, like I said, you have managed to still maintain yourself, you know, and not let yourself, I guess, get lost in kind of like a not so healthy way, you know, with this role that you're in. All right. So my last question is just kind of, you know, to leave it open to you, you know, is there anything you'd like to share with our listeners? You know, if there's one takeaway that you want them to know about, you know, the life of a pastor's wife, whether it's something that maybe you think is a misunderstood misconception or just a personal thing that you would want to share that you don't think many people know or recognize or realize, or just what you wish they would know about you or just about pastor's wives, maybe.
What I wish they would know is that, I guess because I'm just such myself, and when I, you know, meet people, I'm myself. But I guess maybe from the traditional aspect that of the thinking that maybe people think that like we're on a pedestal and we're not, we're all servants of the Lord. And that my role first and foremost, what God has called me to do, was to support my husband and my children. Everything else comes after.
You're saying, you know, that your role first and foremost is supporting your husband and your children. And, you know, I think that's something that regardless of what type of, you know, denomination you're part of, or even, you know, just whether you're a believer or not, I think that's something that a lot of women can relate to, that is kind of, you know, whatever we're in life, really our family and our relationships are kind of, you know, what we put a lot of our energy into, and what we tend to make a priority. And I mean that in a good way, not in an unhealthy way where you lose yourself, but just that I think every woman can relate to the idea that, hey, more important than anything is that I want to support the people around me that I love. And, you know, if you're a married woman, that's going to be your husband. And if you're a mother, that's going to be your children. So I love that you said that, because I think you kind of make it very accessible to all the women in your church to relate to you, and that, hey, I'm just like you, you know, I'm supporting my husband and I'm supporting my kids, and my husband happens to be a pastor and my kids happen to be pastor's kids. And so maybe I that means I'm going to support them in some different ways, but I'm still just living out my life and my calling, you know, like you all are. And again, I don't want to diminish this and say that that's all a woman's calling is supporting her husband or children, because I firmly believe that, you know, God made us to be individuals and have our own callings that are a part of that as well.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, that's cool. So here's the takeaway, folks. If you meet Rika, or maybe your own pastor's wife, and she's being nice to you and she's talking to you, there's a good chance that she's actually just being her real self. She's not, because that's that when you get Rika, you're getting a real deal here.
Real deal. Well, thank you so much for this opportunity. When you said interview, I was like, oh, What am I going to say? What is she going to ask me?
And thank you for bearing with me, since I am not a professional interviewer and did not prepare a list of questions. So this was 100% ad-libbed on the fly and just trying to have some fun.
Yeah, that was awesome. I love it. So as we end today's show, we hope that you got something out of it, and we would love to hear from you. So message us on Instagram at galatians.51.
Ooh, you got it.
Yeah. I'd probably mess up our email address, but I won't share that. But yeah, so join us next time, and we're praying for our sister Tish that she will get well and God's healing on her, and for all people who are dealing with illnesses. And so we just pray your healing as well in the name of Jesus. And whatever you stand in need of, we just pray that the Holy Spirit will intercede on your behalf. We thank and praise God for this time. Talk to y'all next time.
Amen.